I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Mayor Sly James delivered his State of the City address at the Nelson Atkins last night, looking back on the progress Kansas City has made over the past year and what lies ahead. Today, the mayor is here to discuss the speech and his priorities for the city. We'll also ask him about the general obligation bond proposal that voters will see on their election ballots come April 4th. Then we'll discuss the 1/8-cent sales tax proposal that's showing up on the same ballot. It's for economic development projects between the Paseo and Indiana Avenue. Later, Bill Brownlee's here with this week's Local Listen. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James just gave another State of the City address last evening and emphasized several initiatives that haven't gotten a whole lot of attention. One involves getting people of color into commercial real estate. Another involves an upcoming school suspension summit, a pressing issue for young African-American males. The mayor also wants to focus more on programs that help children and teens who've experienced trauma or violence. The mayor is stumping for that big $800 million general obligation bond issue on next week's ballot. We'll get to that in just a little bit, and he's right here in the studio with me now. And Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I want to cover a few of the issues that you discussed last night at your State of the City address, but I also want to give our listeners a chance to call in with their questions about that big $800 million general obligation bond issue that they will decide next week. You can do that now. 816-235-2888 is the number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Why aren't more people of color involved in commercial real estate, Mayor?
Why aren't they?
Yes.
I really can't answer that question, but I do think it has something to do with the basic systemic racism that exists in this country.
And real estate agents have had a checkered history in Kansas City, Missouri.
For sure. And it started quite some time ago with Nichols. I also think that it has a lot to do with access to capital, which in and of itself has some tinges of systemic racism.
So what do you want to see happen here?
Well, I think that there is now an opportunity for young African-American people or Latino people, anybody of color, to enter the REAP program, which is in its first cohort, and work with the majority community and lenders and real estate developers to learn the business, make friends, and have that cross-culturalization that will result in relationships between sides that have not previously had strong personal relationships so that they can move forward together and explore opportunities together. I think it's paramount that we start doing those things, just as we've tried to make sure that we're always thinking about integrating women in decision-making processes in business. We have to do the same thing with our minority folks.
You're also concerned about the trauma that young people have experienced in our community due to violence. What do you have in mind with that one?
Well, there's a lot of people who are trying to do things, but when you really think about it, as an adult, adults have much more access to mental health issues than kids do. And sometimes I don't think people really stop to think of the consequences of a child who witnesses violence or murder or death or things that are really traumatic. I've never heard anybody say that that child has PTSD. But we know that we talk about people coming back from war who have PTSD.
Who are much older.
Much older, but everybody pays attention to that. What about the child who watches his father or mother get shot or is living in a house that gets sprayed with bullets and their brother or sister gets shot? Where is the treatment for PTSD for those kids and other trauma-informed care?
I just assume there were programs for people who are exposed to things like that.
You know, there are some people, there are people who do good things, and Children's Mercy has some work in that area, but there's nothing really coordinated that we found where where we're really taking this issue as seriously as we take servicemen coming back from war or people involved in other traumatic experiences. A lot of what we do is adult-focused. We need to be more kid-focused.
Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering, I know you get asked this a lot, how concerned you are about the number of homicides in town, which, of course, continues to climb. We've had 27 as of yesterday. And that's more at this point in the year than at any other year of the last five. What's going on out there?
You know, I don't know. I wish I could tell you, but nobody has an answer for this. If we had answers, we'd be using them. I can tell you this, that it's always concerned me, and I've always found it interesting, that Kansas City and St. Louis, two cities who until St. Louis became the, you know, not one, two cities that had no control over the actions of their police department, living in the state that has some of the most lax gun laws in the entire country, we always seem to wind up in that situation. Now, some people will say that that's total coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there is a real connection there between not having control over some of your enforcement resources and people having access, unfettered access to guns. We live in a time of violence, and we live in a time where people are using guns to solve arguments that we used to solve with words, and at worst, a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
But now a gun is ubiquitous. I mean, it's like kids have guns in backpacks like they have books in backpacks. Sometimes they have more guns than books.
Well, if you wanted to regain local control of the department, as you're suggesting here, what needs to happen?
Well, there has to be a willingness on all sides to do that.
And changes in state law and maybe the...
Absolutely. There has to be a change in state law. There has to be a recognition that the reasons and rationales that led to that whole situation in the first place no longer exist.
This was Tom Pendergast and back in the 30s.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, and people like to cling to stuff. But think about it from the other side, too. If I was in a situation where somebody else had to simply give me a check and they couldn't tell me what to do, why would you want to change that?
You talk to any former police chief in this town, and they will tell you that local control would be a huge mistake because then you have members of the council dictating and politicizing law enforcement decision-making. It's the last thing in the world they want, and you've been told that before.
Sure, and I also look around at every other city in the entire United States, and boy, oh boy, I just don't see that being a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to prove it. But again, if you've had a system that you've been in total and complete charge of with no real accountability, why would you want to change that?
Well, the accountability comes in the form of the Board of Police Commissioners that you serve on.
Mm-hmm.
Are you suggesting that board doesn't have the kind of accountability that it needs to have?
I'm suggesting that a board that is selected by the governor, who oftentimes doesn't even know who he's putting on the board from a personal standpoint, and a board that is limited to policy direction only, it does not have the level of accountability of some other systems where there is more direct control and accountability of the police department. This board was put in place in order to accommodate the existing system.
Mm-hmm.
If the system changes, then the board's functions would change as well. Might not even be a board for all I know.
Well, have you formally asked the Kansas City delegation in Jeff City to go ahead and put a bill in the hopper that would get this done?
We've done that in the past, yes.
And what's happened?
Not much.
It happened in St. Louis, though. They changed a few years ago.
St. Louis changed not because it was somebody asking. It was because of Rex Singfeld pushing it and forcing it on them. That's what really happened. I wouldn't want that system either. I wouldn't want what he did either. I think there's a way to do this, but I think there's a way that you have to move it slowly and you have to make the transitions. People don't respond well to immediate and abrupt change. I think there's a way of ushering in a new system over a period of years that results in better stuff. Now, I want to make
your problem with St. Louis was it was too quick, too much too soon?
I think it was too much too soon. There were people who hadn't gotten over the basic shock. There was anger. There was all sorts of different things. And maybe it's smoothing out now, but I don't want to see that. And I also want to say, I don't want people getting this twisted. Talking about systems of policing is not about talking about police. The police officers that work in the city are dedicated people. They do their job as well as they possibly could. I'm not talking about them. I have nothing but respect for them. What I have a problem with is the way that the city and the police department interact and, well, frankly, don't interact much, and the duplication of services between the police department and the city, and that duplication is inefficient and costly.
That's been talked about for years in this town. It hasn't changed?
Well, a little bit. There's been a little bit of change. Yeah. There's been some combination of IT. But I had the department give me a list of duplicative services. And there's 8 or 10 programs and organizations that they have that we already do. HR, maintenance, motor pool. All of these things are separate. There are efficiencies to be found in combining those, and those efficiencies would result in savings, and the savings could then be put back perhaps into the policing effort to make the policing effort better.
You know, it seems to me that it wouldn't be that tough of a sell in Jeff City if St. Louis just happened a few years ago and you're making the kind of argument that you are, that you could get this done.
Well, you obviously have not paid attention to the pull of police and public safety people in a legislature that is scared stiff to do anything that might possibly be construed as anti-police or fire. In a legislature that is dominated by people who don't necessarily have strong positive feelings about cities. So, yeah, you would think it would be easy. You would think it'd be logical, but a lot of things in politics are neither easy nor logical.
You've noticed that, eh?
Yes, much more than I prefer.
Mayor Sly James is in the house. We're talking about the crime rate in Kansas City. The Kansas City No Violence Alliance was touted as this innovative way to deal with violent crime when it was launched a few years ago. There are social services available for people who are thought to be susceptible to committing violence. Why hasn't that program proven to be more effective in recent years? Or is it effective, and the number of homicides would be twice as many if KC Nova didn't exist?
Well, it is effective, and I can't predict whether or not the homicides would be twice as many. I can tell you, however, that 135 or so people who were involved in the fringes of or prone to or engaged in things that were violent are no longer doing so.
Mm-hmm.
I also can't tell you that there is any silver bullet that is going to wipe out and change this profile of violence that we have in this entire country
right. In
a matter of a few years. I also can't tell you that KC Nova has anything whatsoever to do with poverty, with housing patterns, with racism, with joblessness, with poor education. All of these things contribute to violence and lawlessness, and KC Nova has nothing to do with that. We're focused on group-related violence, and that has come down.
Mayor, let's do this. Let's take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to turn our conversation to that big $800 million bond issue for roads, sidewalks, bridges, flood control, and all the rest. It's on Tuesday's ballot. We're going to take your questions at 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's program, we looked at what's behind the increasing rate of earthquakes in the Midwest and strategies to bridge the partisan divide in U.S. politics. You can find those conversations online at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, learn about the original Kansas City play that explores the offensively non-offensive. Also, how to approach blighted areas differently and build a better block in the process. Well, Kansas City Mayor Sly James is in the house. We're going to turn now to the $800 million bond issue that goes before voters next Tuesday. This is for sidewalks, bridges, flood control, building improvements around town. I should point out that I'm a member of the STARS editorial board, and we've backed this plan. Mayor, why is it needed? Because $800 million bucks is a whole lot of money.
Kansas City is a whole lot of city.
Yeah.
It has been for some time. It's 318 square miles, 6,300 lane miles of road, 42 miles of sidewalk, about 3,800 miles of underground piping and structures. This is a big city, low population. Maintenance is not kept up with growth. Maintenance is not kept up with the assets itself. It's not popular. It's hard to do politically. People want to come after you. They are very suspicious of government. And it is absolutely vital that we recognize the basic things of if we do not fix our infrastructure, it will only get worse. And eventually, there's only two options. We either fix it or it crumbles. Those are the only two options. Perfect example. People have been talking about the Broadway Bridge, now the Buck O'Neill Bridge, for decades about how it needed something done. Well, nothing was done. Now look at what's going to happen. We have a very difficult situation where there either might be an emergency closure or the Missouri Department of Transportation, MoDOT, will have to come up with money. They only have about $48 million to fix the bridge. That's fix it, not replace it like we originally wanted. And that would mean closing that bridge for 2 years. Hmm. What do you think happens to the traffic going north and south? What about VML down at the airport down there? You know, we can't run away from the reality. And there's people out there, they're criticizing this and criticizing that. Well, more, God bless them. There's people that would criticize Jesus if he showed up. But the bottom line is the reality has to be that we have to fix the things that require that provide us with business, that provide us with safety, that stop our businesses from flooding out, our basements from flooding out, people getting caught in floodwaters down in the Turkey Creek area, from ADA compliance and a $10,000 a day fine if we don't comply with the ADA, and from doing the immoral things like keeping people with disabilities out of public places. $735 million to fix the 51% of the roads that are right now in either fair trending towards poor or poor condition. That's 51% right now. If we wait another 10 years, if we wait another 5 years, that number goes to $1.2 billion, and the 51%, that's just on the 51%. The 51% becomes closer to 60.
So if you fix, we spend $800 million over the next 20 years on all these projects. To what extent does that take care of Kansas City's infrastructure backlog?
It doesn't.
Does it solve it?
No, absolutely not. But it's like anything else. We're not going to be... You know, we can't solve big problems in one fell swoop. These problems have existed for years, and they have not been adequately addressed. And to try to fix it in a shorter period of time is going to be either way too expensive or entirely too difficult and unacceptable to people. What we are trying to do is to stop the slide, to get to things before they reach the tipping point.
Because the numbers that's out there from the folks at your city hall, Mayor, is $6 billion in needs out there. This takes care of roughly one-sixth, not even one-sixth, of what that need is.
That's true, but we're also doing things on other fronts, too. For example, part of that $6 billion was our underground water infrastructure. So there's been a main replacement program that's been going on, a main exercise program, hydrant replacements, pipeline replacements that's been going on for years. And that's whittled away at some of the water issues. The overflow control program that's mandated by the federal government is having some effect because in the process of complying with the mandate for overflow control, we're changing some of those things in and out too. So we're making progress on some areas, but we're still billions behind in terms of maintenance. But we'll never catch up if we do nothing.
There are, just to be clear, there are three questions on the ballot next week for Kansas Citians. One question for roads and sidewalks, one for flood control, and one for making, as you mentioned a minute ago, public buildings meeting the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Each question has to pass with 57% to win approval. Do I have that right?
57.1, and don't forget the animal shelter in question three.
Okay. Why divide the issue into three questions? Why not just one? Put them all in one big thing?
That's what we wanted to do, but our bond Our bond council said you can't do that. You have to combine like things with like things. You can't put public buildings and ADA compliance with road maintenance and bridge maintenance and sidewalk repair. You can't put either of those with water and flood control.
So it's legal stuff.
So the lawyers who look at this and maintain this and watch what we do said you can't do it like that. And those same lawyers will be looking at what we do year after year to make sure that we're complying with the law and their edict.
This all comes down to a property tax increase, which is never the most popular type of tax anyway.
I don't know of any tax that's popular.
But why the property tax? Why not sales?
For one, property tax spreads it across everybody in an even fashion. Commercial property owners will actually pay a higher rate than residential property owners. Sales tax would not generate the amount of revenue necessary to do this for a sustainable period of time, and sales taxes are even much more regressive. In this situation, if you're a person who has a house that's $40,000, your property tax is going to go up a heck of a lot less than the person who has the $1 million house or the $150,000 house. So it's more targeted towards trying to be sensitive to the specific plights of people rather than saying it doesn't matter who you are, you're going to pay this tax.
Let's go to some phone calls. 816-235-2888. Kansas City Mayor Sly James is in the house here. Let's go to Jason from Brookside. Jason, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your service, Mayor James.
Thank you.
I got to admit, first, let me start off, I live in Brookside, which is obviously one of the more affluent neighborhoods in the city, but I'm a transplant here. I've been here for 12 years, and over that decade and a few years, I don't feel that the city has utilized their current tax base well enough for me to, go ahead and vote for more taxes.
What's your concern, Jason?
The sidewalks have always been horrible here. So, here we are a decade and a half later, and millions of dollars later that have been collected in taxes and never used to fix those. I'm a mailman. The route I'm on today, or several routes I do, don't even have sidewalks in the neighborhood. So, I mean, that's just to keep it brief.
Well, yeah. But sidewalks have never been a tax issue. Sidewalks are a homeowner and property owner issue. If your sidewalk needs to be repaired, that's on the homeowner to pay for that. The sidewalk program that we're talking about would relieve the homeowner or the property owner, whether it's commercial or residential, of that burden. So it's not a matter of tax money. It's a matter of people money. We could come fix every sidewalk, and we could bill everybody in this city for $3,000 to $5,000 on a straight line, or about $10,000 on a corner lot. That's not what people have wanted. So I think you're confusing the responsibilities. It's not the city's responsibility under the current system to fix sidewalks. It's the property owner's responsibility to do that. And what we're proposing would switch that and make it our responsibility.
Jason, thanks for the call. How about city debt, Mayor? The city's carrying debt load today, $2.6 billion. That's a concern for some.
Sure.
What do you make of it? Is it too much to take on this added debt?
No, as a matter of fact, it's not. One of the reasons we're doing it this way and doing it at this time is because as over the 20-year period, at the rate that we're paying off debt at about $100 million a year, we will be in less debt at the end of $20 million, having added $800
At the end
million.
Of 20 years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But we will reach a tipping point on that midpoint because we're paying off debt faster than we're adding debt on.
People want to know this too, Mayor. How will the city decide which street or sidewalk projects will be tackled first and then second and third and so on?
Well, we've probably got a year and a half worth of backlog sidewalk requests from people who want their sidewalks fixed, but for whatever reason don't have the money for the assessment or whatever. And we can start on those immediately and get those done. Now, I would argue that if you go to an area where Mrs. Jones at 1111 Main wants her sidewalk fixed, fix her sidewalk, but as you look around the rest of that block, if there's other sidewalks that need to be fixed, fix the whole thing so that we have that we're being efficient and that we're having our crews stay in one place and get things done, and that there's a real change in the way neighborhoods look. The sidewalk program will look first towards the inspections of the sidewalks citywide, and then they will take into account various factors like proximity to school. We want our kids to be able to walk to school and their parents to be able to walk with them without tripping. Proximity to public transportation, because we want people in wheelchairs not to have to roll their wheelchairs down the curb instead of the sidewalk to get to a bus stop. And proximity to job centers, because we know a lot of people are going to be walking in those areas, and other factors like that, so that when we can grade those out, we can prioritize based on objective, verifiable factors.
At some point, will there be a list produced so that a homeowner could say, well, this is going to happen for me in year three?
There's already, well, I don't know about year three, but there's already a map showing some of these things that's out there. Councilman Wagner, the mayor pro tem, has worked for 2 or 3 years on this process. He's probably the sidewalk knowledge person. But yeah, there's information out there. I can't tell you that anybody's going to be able to say, my sidewalk's going to be fixed at such and such a time. What I would expect to have happen if this passes is on April 5, we'll probably get a flood of phone calls wanting their sidewalks fixed.
Question two on the ballot. I want to get everyone up to speed on this, too.
Sure.
It's the flood control bond issue that you've mentioned here. It leverages federal dollars. How much in federal dollars, and why does it do that?
$536 million of federal money.
So if we pass this, we get $500 million worth of federal money.
For flood control.
Okay.
Absolutely. And the reason that that happened is because we went to Congressman Cleaver and Congressman Graves and employed them to help us, and they agreed to do so. So they went out and used some of their political capital to get that money put in the budget. But we can't access that money without our $150 million. It's a matching type of a situation.
So if this doesn't pass, we don't get the $500 million worth of federal money.
No, and we don't get the $150 either. So we'll continue to work on the 15-year flood projects. We'll continue to try to find enough money to scrape up year after year to actually finish the Brush Creek Basin and move all the way to the Lake of the Enshriners, which is an equity situation as well as a flood control situation.
And where is that?
It's east of Troost and the flood
The
flood area. So it's like we went through the plaza and we went in that area, but we never finished on the east side. We need to finish that. If we don't finish it, we'll never fix Turkey Creek, which means we'll miss out on some development opportunities. My daughter tried to drive through waters.
She got
Turkey
caught
Creek.
In this thing, right?
She had to climb out of the sunroof of her car. To get out of that situation. Now, the good news is...
That's why you're pushing this so hard. It comes home to roost, doesn't
it? Well, to some extent, it certainly brought it home in a very personal way, but it's always been a problem. She managed to parlay that into a new car, which was good on her part. But the bottom line is that other people have that. Jason was talking about living in Brookside. There's people in Brookside whose basements flood. My chief of staff lives north of the river near Briarcliff. Her basement floods.
Mm-hmm.
We've got businesses moving out of industrial areas because their businesses flood. We've got the third biggest levee system in the country behind New Orleans and Sacramento, and ours isn't even complete. We've got flood control programs that have been working on for 10, 15, 20 years. We just finished one in 2016 that started in 1951.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So these are all major, major things. You can't do it without the money, and it takes a long time to save up $15, $20 million to make a major hit on the flood control program.
I also want to touch on question three, which you've also mentioned here. It has to do with bringing public buildings into compliance with the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Sure.
Now, if we don't get those buildings into compliance, the result is what?
Fines. We have until 2018 to address these problems. We won't make 2018 deadline, but we have relatively decent assurances that if we...
If we have a plan
in place and we're making progress, that deadline can be extended. If we have neither of those, then what happens is we will be subject to a $10,000 a day fine until we are in compliance, and all federal funds will be stopped.
Why didn't you ultimately make this plan of $800 million? Why not make it $1.5 billion or $2 billion? Why not go further?
It would have been a lot less affordable to the average person on the street. We looked at all sorts of different options. What we chose is the lowest and the slowest and the most affordable approach. Again, you eat the elephant one bite at a time. If you try to eat too much, then you're going to choke. We didn't want to choke. We didn't want other people to choke. But we also wanted to have enough resources to make a big dent in things that are out there. We have to do things in ways that make sense, and we tried to very much to do that in this one. We know that, and I don't care what the critics say, nobody can dispute the importance of the foundation of this city in terms of infrastructure and its need. And nobody has come up with a better plan. And people who think that they can move this tax or change this thing, they're living in a fantasy world. We are doing the best job that we can to bring about a change that is significant and one that others have not wanted to tackle. I'm not afraid to tackle it, neither is the city manager, and we're going to do it this way if we can.
Critics have said that ultimately what you're asking for voters to do is trust City Hall to get this done this year and in the 20 years to come to handle this money appropriately. You say what to that? Is that what it comes down to?
In some people's minds, I think it does. But I'm saying trust your own eyes. Trust what we've said in the last 6 years that we've been in office. You know, there were critics who said we shouldn't have the streetcar. And we said streetcar will bring employment, streetcar will bring development, streetcar will bring increased taxes, streetcar will bring density, streetcar is something that we need. And guess what? We were right and they were wrong. 58% higher sales taxes in the TDD compared to 16% in the rest of the city. 1.7 million riders, $1.7 billion of development since we announced streetcar. Those are things that you can see for your own eyes. People were skeptical about Google. Look what Google has done to us. Mm-hmm. People were skeptical about a lot of things. People distrust government. That's what they do, and it's not just here, it's across the country. That's why we have the situation on the national level that we do. Bottom line is that they can distrust it all they want. What we're trying to do is to bring them something that makes sense and tell them the truth, and it's up to them to believe it or not.
Mayor, final point here. You need 57.1% to adopt these three questions.
Right.
Why the extraordinary majority? Whatever happened to a simple majority?
Well, with bond issues, it's different. With property tax bond issues, GO bond issues, it's different. And that's in order to make sure that if we're going to tackle a property tax increase, that we are getting a supermajority to do it. This is the down period, 57.1. The normal period is 66%.
Even higher.
Oh, yeah.
That's Kansas City, Missouri Mayor Sly James talking about the big GO bond issue on the ballot next week. Mayor, it's always great to have you here. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
And now another issue on Tuesday's ballot is the 1/8 cent sales tax for improvements on the east side of Kansas City. This is an area from roughly 9th Street to Gregory Boulevard, from the Paseo to Indiana Avenue. Again, the Star's editorial board, which I am a member of, has endorsed this plan as well. Here to talk about it is Gwen Grant. She's president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Kansas City. And Gwen, it's always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you, Steve.
Why a citywide sales tax for a specific part of the city, Gwen?
Well, the One City initiative is needed to revitalize an area in Kansas City that has been long devoid of any major financial investments from the city, from public or private investors, to revitalize an area that is impoverished, that is blighted, and crime-ridden.
You know, Gwen, you and several other folks who are backing this plan took the Star's editorial board on a tour of the east side down Prospect just a few weeks ago. That was breathtaking. I hadn't been over there for a few years, and it's a reminder that there are parts of this city that look very different than other parts of this city.
Yes, you know, it is a sad reminder that what we have in Kansas City right now is a situation where two-thirds of our population, two-thirds of our communities are thriving, and we have this one-third of our community in the inner city that is being left behind. And we believe that Kansas City is so much better than that. We're a great city. We have the opportunity to be a first-class city, but we can't do that if we continue to leave these communities behind.
You know, one thing that struck me about that tour is you could argue this, that even though this tax would raise $100 million over a decade, Gwen, that even that amount of money wouldn't be enough to put a serious dent in the needs that are present in that part of town.
You know, that is an argument that we've heard, but you know, $8.5 million annually would go a long way in an area that has had practically no investment. And that revenue could be used to foster catalytic equity funding. It can be used to reduce blight, combat crime, and to defray some of the extraordinary costs that adversely impact the financial feasibility of doing projects on the east side.
Yeah.
So it really, while it seems like a small amount, it is a small amount, but in this particular case, it can have significant positive impact.
We're talking about the 1/8-cent sales tax proposal on the ballot next week, devoted to the east side of Kansas City. If you want to ask a question of Gwen Grant, 816-235-2888 is the number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Gwen, you just mentioned the prospect of fighting crime with some of this money. What do you have in mind there? What might be some of the ideas that might come forward?
One in particular would be to install some technology called ShotSpotter gunfire sensing technology.
That's already in some parts of town.
It's in some parts of town, and it has been, you know, proven to be effective. So this is, I think, a really productive approach to addressing crime in the area. But we also know that removal of blight, creating jobs, working on streetscapes and lighting, those types of investments also have a positive impact on a community. They increase livability and has major impact on reducing crime.
You know, is there a list of proposals for how this money would be spent now, or would that be developed once this thing would pass?
Well, certainly our community has a list of proposals or ideas on how the money could be used. But if the initiative passes, then there will be a governing body that will vet projects. The public will have the opportunity to provide input and recommendations, and then the actual investments will be approved by the city council.
And I was going to say, this group would meet and make proposals and recommendations, and it goes before the council for a final sign-off here.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. 816-235-2888 is the phone number here. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. This money could be spent anywhere in this district, Gwen. That's been outlined here, the boundaries. But the focus, at least from the perspective of campaign organizers, is to upgrade the Prospect Corridor, at least maybe coming out of the gate. Do I have that right?
Yes. So the actual boundaries are 9th Street on the north, Gregory on the south, Paseo on the west, and Indiana Avenue on the east.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at what we would like to see in terms of priority investments out of the box with the initiative would be certainly to address streetscapes and walkability lighting east and west of Prospect at 31st Street, 39th and 63rd Street intersections. Mm-hmm. We would also like to see some support for building upon the progress that we see at 27th and Prospect, where the crime lab is, and there's a community center that was recently built on the corner of 27th and Prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd like to see some housing projects to be born in that community and have those grow from 27th and Prospect to Emmanuel Cleaver II Boulevard. So those are just some of the priority areas that we've outlined.
This governing body, just one more thing before I go to a phone call here, this governing body, Gwen, that you're talking about that would come together if this proposal passes, how would they be picked? Where do those people come from?
Three would be appointed by the mayor. One would be appointed by the Kansas City Public Schools Board, and one by the Jackson County.
Okay.
So it'll be a 5-member commission.
816-235-2888 is the number here. Let's go to Jeremy from Kansas City, Missouri. He's in the Westport neighborhood. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, so I guess I was just, I had a question based on some of the development projects. I guess the specific, you've already addressed a few of the more broad projects that you're going to tackle. But I guess I was wondering, as far as housing goes, I've heard of maybe like a big apartment building with several like efficient micro apartments going in, and the rent would be somewhere around like $800 a month. I guess is that too expensive for people to put over there? And how are you going to deal with the fact that maybe some people see this as gentrification instead of helping people okay. that really need it?
Jeremy, thank you for the call. What about this idea of micro apartments that Jeremy mentioned? Are you hearing that kind of talk?
I'm not familiar with that at all. I'm okay. sorry, I really can't speak to it. I've not heard.
How about gentrification? If you begin to upgrade a lot of these areas here, might you begin to price some people out of their homes, Gwen, because property values would go up so much?
Well, I think the answer to that would be we are always concerned about gentrification, but we certainly, in this particular case, have the opportunity to work in collaboration with neighborhood and community groups and to ensure that there are, when we come talk about housing, that we have mixed rates, we have affordable housing combined with market rate housing opportunities in the community. And that's how you balance out and prevent gentrification from taking place.
You know, one of the criticisms you hear is that the plan lacks detail. There's no prioritization of projects. And what you're saying here is that maybe that's putting the cart before the horse, that you have to have the committee set up once this would pass and then the priorities aligned at that point. Am I seeing that correctly?
Well, yeah. So for me, I think the clarity is this by statute, we have boundaries that define where this money has to be invested. So it's get out of the box. That is an important specific process. So mm-hmm. we're talking about the revenues having to be invested within this area. We talk about it being used for specific purposes. So we can't define specific projects because we have a public process that allows a full engagement of the community. So it would be really, I think, inappropriate to come forward and say, we're going to do A, B, C, D without the input of the people who were most impacted. So people in the communities, the businesses on the Prospect Corridor would have the opportunity to weigh in on how they'd like to see their particular area developed and then put out requests for proposals so that developers can come and say, we'd like to put this retail opportunity here, or we'd like to do this housing project combined with retail. So I think what we've done is outlined a vision with some degree of specificity without going too far.
Whose idea was this? Where did this come from?
This idea was born out of the work of a group called the Urban Summit, and the work on it actually started 4 to 5 years ago out of the frustration of people in the inner city who have voted time and time again for tax initiatives to support projects such as the renovation of Union Station, expansion of the zoo, renovation of Truman Sports Complex, public improvements, investments, one initiative after another while their communities are left behind. And so out of that frustration, planning and an economic development committee birthed this idea of let's have an initiative to support revitalizing the Prospect Corridor because it is good for Kansas City as a whole. And it's not something that we look at as that over there on the east side and the west side. We need to not look at it in that context. That's why we call it the One City Initiative, because Kansas City's viability, Kansas City's ability to achieve first-class status hinges on our ability to take care of every community, to make every community a livable community where all of our residents can thrive.
And unlike the GO bonds, you just need a simple majority to pass this
thing.
Yes,
we do.
Okay. That's Gwen Grant, President and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Kansas City, talking about the 1/8-cent sales tax that'll be on the ballot next week for the city's east side. Gwen, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
KCUR contributor Bill Brownlee is back with this week's Local Listen, highlighting a local band that's doing some cool stuff. And Bill, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
We're going to talk about a group here today called Secondhand King.
That's right. Secondhand King is a project of a Kansas City guy named Joe Stanziola. And he's sort of a rapper.
We'll find out. Let's listen to Secondhand King. This is Go So Wrong. That's Go So Wrong from the Secondhand King. Is this rap? Because it feels a little bit that way, but not quite.
Yeah, that's right. He has his own lane. He's entirely unique here in Kansas City. But yeah, anyone who's accustomed to listening to Kendrick Lamar or Young Thug, you know, won't hear much to grab onto here with Secondhand King.
He describes it himself as doo-wop rap. Doo-wop. What's doo-wop rap?
Yeah, I think, you know, he associates himself with, you know, the era of Frankie Valli and maybe even some of the Rat Pack music of, you know, Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. There's a lot of that, you know, 1950s feel here.
So we're seeing rap sort of segregate into different sort of genres in a sense. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. I don't want to speak for Joe, but I get the sense that he feels, you know, doesn't, you know, he clearly doesn't feel part of the, you know, urban crime experience, but he certainly relates to, you know, guys like Frank Sinatra.
This city is home to a few other rappers, Bill. Is there anything in his music that comes across as uniquely Kansas City?
Well, his video for this song, which is just fantastic, is filmed in the River Market. It's gorgeous. It's funny. So, yeah, he has a lot of hometown pride. And I think, you know, even in the inflection of his voice, you can us Kansas Cityans can recognize ourselves in him.
Well, what is the rap scene like here? Is it growing? Is it thriving? How would you characterize it?
Well, you know, Tech N9ne, you know, overshadows everyone. But Secondhand King is part of the collective run by a guy named Steady P. So, you know, he often plays shows with the Steady P crew, which is called Indieground. But on Friday at the Record Bar, he's going to be playing with rock bands.
I was going to say Secondhand King performs Friday at the Record Bar. That's coming up just in a day or so here. And Bill Brownlee, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
For filling us in on Go So Wrong here in Secondhand King. All right. Follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. You can download our podcast and listen to previous programs. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, the homegrown play that explores the offensively non-offensive. How's that for a twist? And building a better block in blighted areas. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatacoro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.